getting the data into people's hand is like, you know, it's great. But for most organizations that we engage with in some way, shape, or form, at least at the beginning, some of the most interesting and most important questions are not how do we get the data, but what do we do once we have the data, right? It's not just about getting more data from internal sources and external sources. It's really how do you leverage it for insights and identification of risks and opportunities and decision-making and better design.
Welcome to the Social Impact Solutions Podcast, where we help mission-driven leaders measure and market their social impact so they can raise more money and do more good. I'm Lauren.
And I'm John Mark. Together, we bring you expert insights, practical strategies, and real-world stories to help you create more meaningful and measurable change. This podcast is designed for purpose-driven leaders. So let's dive in, explore what's possible, and take your mission to the next level.
Welcome back to the Social Impact Solutions Podcast. Today, I am really excited to share a conversation with all of our listeners with Ori Carmel, who is founder and CEO of Sowin, and Sophie Blondeau, who is Chief Strategy Officer and Partner at Sowin. They are a fantastic duo, and I'm just really excited to share our conversation around nonprofit and social impact measurement, how you can better measure your impact at your organization, and some of the challenges that we at Social Impact Solutions and Sowin see organizations facing so often. Sowin is a strategic consultancy established in 2018 as an offshoot of their work with Bloomberg Philanthropies. They partner with foundations and nonprofits to accelerate social and business impact. They design, implement, and measure data-driven solutions that drive organizational change, improve operations, save time, and generate funding. At the core of what Sowin does is data and technology. They like to say that the shortest distance between data and impact is Sowin. So let's dive in, join today's conversation with Ori and Sophie, and let's talk more about the challenges that nonprofits and social good organizations are facing when it comes to impact measurement and some of the ways that you can mitigate that. Ori and Sophie, thank you both so much for being here today. I'm really excited for our conversation. We've had several conversations prior to this, and you're both such kind, collaborative individuals. You're also both very intelligent, and you both have so much experience in the for-profit and the nonprofit world with marketing and communication and more data and analytics between the two of you. You bring so much insight. So I'm really thrilled to have a conversation today about measuring nonprofit impact and the challenges that all of us see. Whether that's at your firm at Sowin or with us at Social Impact Solutions, we see a lot of nonprofits struggling to measure, analyze, and communicate their impact. So let's just dive right in and would love to hear from both of you. Why does this topic matter right now, generally speaking, as well as maybe more specifically here in Q2 of 2025? Why does nonprofit impact measurement and communication matter so much?
Yeah. So first of all, thank you so much for having us, Lauren. It's really great. We're always happy to and thrilled to talk to other smart, you know, purpose-driven organizations. So really, really appreciate the opportunity here. I guess that to answer your question, I think the immediate answer is kind of all around us. We're in this constant state of very, very rapid change. Right. And I think that's just the modus operandi that we're going to be living under for the foreseeable future. We can talk about whether that's accidental or by design. You can guess my thoughts on that. But the fact of the matter is, you know, we can certainly expect, based on what we know right now, for things to continue being in a constant state of uncertainty and flux. And within that environment, thinking about the things that we can control and should control and where we can make an impact, getting a clearer understanding of what organizations do, for each organization might be different, but getting an understanding of what you do as an organization or even as an individual within that organization, and then getting very, very specific about how that manifests in terms of impact on your stakeholders, your environment, the individuals, the communities that you aim to impact, regardless of what you do and what your focus area is or area of expertise, is really a critical component of trying to understand whether you are focusing your efforts on the things that actually matter. And I think that becomes even more important when times are turbulent, when there's a lot of uncertainty. The ability to focus on the few things that you do that really drive impact and being able to demonstrate that impact become even more existential to most organizations that we see, or at least the ones that are proactively thinking about how do they want to continue making an impact and even accelerating it in this time of uncertainty. I don't know, Sophie, what do you think?
Well, first of all, thank you so much, Lauren, for having us. Ori and I have these conversations all the time. And it's always wonderful to add more people to the conversation because there's many, many different perspectives to the topic. But I think I agree with Ori. For me, from a personal level, from our clients' perspective, and whether it's today or 5 years ago, I think the reason to measure impact is it's incredibly grounding when you are in a storm, when we're under pressure. So, you know, in this moment, obviously, as Ori said, a lot of us are feeling disoriented and we don't know which way's up and which way's down. And that changes every day. But I think that's true at any time. I mean, if you think back to COVID, we've all lived through COVID. That was very disorienting. So I think that knowing where you are in terms of your mission, vision, and purpose, what change you are trying to create. So being very, very clear on that. Where you are in your theory of change and which part of theory of change you're trying to affect the most in this moment, because you can't do the whole thing at once, right? You need to know where you're starting. And so in order to measure any progress, whether you're trying to improve your programming, whether you're trying to get some more funding, you have to measure your impact and your path. So I think that, you know, we're very aware that in this moment, but in normal times, it's very hard to take the time to say, there's 5-6 different fires going on. Do we really want to go and dig for that data or see, you know, who has it? But it's incredibly important. And of course, as you know, my passion is strategy. Obviously, without the data, without some sort of measurement, you don't know if all of that work, all of that strategic work is having the effect that you want it to have. And lastly, it is a huge opportunity for learning. So, you know, even if you cannot measure, even if it's a failure, there is a lot to learn there. And I think it's super important to be able to get to that knowledge as well.
Yeah, you both raise such great points. You know, we could probably just spend the rest of our time talking just about what both of you have already mentioned. Ori, I think you used the phrase uncertainty, and I've heard that so much in the last few months. Sophie, you said, you know, more disorienting, and I think everyone is feeling a lot of both. While at the same time, it might be the first time that we've lived through this exact moment or these exact months and weeks, but we can refer back to COVID, past economic downturns, other points in history that are pretty recent or even further back, and look at, you know, what worked then and how can we adjust and adapt accordingly, not with certainty that will work now, but with good insight. And so, Sophie, I love what you said about, you know, you have to have the data, you have to have information in order to know if your past strategies have worked. You also have to have data and information in order to execute new and future strategies with the best mindset and with the best intent as well. So really great points, really fantastic insights already. Let's back up just a little bit. You both set the stage very well for the rest of our conversation today. But I would also love for each of you to maybe give your own definition of what we mean by impact, because we're going to use that term, that word, a lot today, and particularly in the nonprofit space, in the social sector, philanthropic space, we see impact this and impact that thrown around more and more. and that's fine. But I think that a lot of people can get confused on what we really mean by that term. And it can get thrown around so frequently that even something like number of website visitors or, you know, number of people served is then somehow considered impact. And I know that none of the three of us mean either of those things when we say impact. So, Sophie, would love to hear from you, your, you know, what do you mean when you say impact? Ori, the same from you as well. And then we can just keep the conversation going.
Well, I think you're 100% right. There's many different definitions and people throw it around. Like that's very often true. I think, you know, you won't be surprised to hear that from my perspective, it really matters about who the stakeholders are. I mean, when we talk about social impact, I think about meaningful, measurable impact on in community. And so that to me is the most important thing. Are you actively measurable in a measurable way impacting the communities that you're trying to serve? That to me is the most important thing. The second thing for me for impact has to go beyond like a specific intervention or a specific program. So, you know, that it has like a long-term effect, that it has like a, you know, it's a virtual cycle that you started. So it's just not time bound to this. We've done, you know, we've served X amount of meals, but it's like, so I'll give you an example. We work with an organization called Faith in Place, right? So their mission is to promote environmental justice through communities of faith. Right. But it goes way beyond just planting trees. It goes to like connecting the community back to its, you know, to its roots. It goes to as far as, you know, promoting health, you know, healthy habits. It means, you know, impacting both the elders in the community and the youth so that they can become ambassadors in the future. So to me, this like enduring social impact is a really, really important component. It's not just a one-off. You know, we've accomplished what we set out to do. Ori?
Yeah. I mean, I think yes to all that. Yes. And to me, it comes down to, have you been able to improve the life and well-being of a person? Right. And that's about it. You know, that can take on many forms, right? Like making sure that coral reefs are you know, regenerating at an appropriate rate and not dying off because of rising water temperatures is a way of impacting someone's health and well-being. Because without coral reefs, they're, you know, the entire ecosystem collapses, and you know, people can certainly not have any sustainable food resources. Entire economies go under. Mental health is another one. There are multiple examples. It doesn't really, we're pretty agnostic to the programmatic view of social impact. What we're not agnostic to is, does it actually help a person live a better life in some way, shape, or form? And as long as you can demonstrate that you have done that, or that you are impacting that, that to me is impact. I do think it's very hard to nail that without understanding logic models. And I think that organizations that don't spend some time thinking about their theory of change and implementing a proper logic problem, logic model, those are the organizations that we see get stuck at measuring things that are, you know, activities or outputs, or sometimes if they're really lucky, outcomes, right? They measure things like how many gatherings, how many emails they've sent, even funding, right? Like how much money they've contributed or how much money have they raised. That is still not impact. That's a great thing to measure. And you should measure these things. You should measure all of those things. They are important, but none of those things are impact, right? That is not to say that they shouldn't be tracked. That is not to say that they aren't important. There's just a place and a time to reflect them in the appropriate way based on, as Sophie mentioned, your stakeholders, and a way to speak to them. To me, those are mostly activity metrics, outputs, outcomes. But impact is really, have you been able to reduce the rate of hypertension amongst a specific group that has super high risk, right? Have you been able to improve graduation rates for youths in a specific environment? Like those are and improve their lives and well-being, improve their ability to maintain, keep and maintain a job after graduation. Like, that's impact.
I love it. Every conversation we have, I'm more and more reminded of how well our thought processes align. I know that we approach things differently at Social Impact Solutions and so on. We have different methods. We have different models that we use. So, you know, we're not a direct replica of one another, but we definitely share a lot of the same strategies and foundational components. And so I really appreciate both of your perspectives from a measurable, very well, evidence-based approach of what is impact and how do we actually measure this in a validated and reliable way. One of you mentioned, Sophie, you mentioned theory of change. Ori, you mentioned logic models. We love to use both. Typically, when we're talking logic models, we're talking more of a spreadsheet or a table form. A true theory of change, we're typically talking more of a narrative version, paragraph version. That's not always the case, but that's typically how we talk to our clients about it. I like to start with a logic model and then move into the narrative version of a theory of change. And then we typically use both of those pieces to help us help clients determine or create measurable goals and objectives, right? Because without any of those three pieces, without the logic model, without the theory of change, without the measurable goals and objectives, what metrics do we even decide to measure in the first place when it comes to impact measurement, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that comes down to discipline. And sometimes, it's different. We find that we also very often start with the theory of change. And we usually, say we'll have like a couple of conversations, but they inevitably turn into three or four conversations because they get so robust. And I think that also to add to what Ori was saying before, I think there is room and a purpose for measuring activities sometimes. And sometimes that's where the client is at. That's where the organization is at. And the theory of change gives you this really easy way to know where to meet them. I mean, if they're not in a position to measure outcomes yet, then by all means, start with activities, or by even start before and say, are we 100% sure what the mission, vision, and purpose is right before we even start measuring activities? So I think it's a really great way to make sure that everybody's on the same page and that we're all rowing in the same direction, as we say.
I think there's another pivotal component, and usually something that Sophie actually leads in a lot of the engagements that we have, and that's stakeholder mapping, right? Like understanding who are your stakeholders, internal, external, what do they want? What does success mean to them? What are their pressure points? What do they need to report on and to who, right? Like that really anchored another way to anchor the conversation. It's not the end all be all. Right. But it's really, really pivotal when conflicts start arising, right? As you go through the process, inevitably things are going to come into competition, right? Because we are all living in a world where resources are not, resources are finite. Our time is finite. Our ability to, divide our attention is finite. So adding the component of stakeholders as another point of anchoring to those conversations, I would add to that, to the other tools that we talked about.
That's a really great point, Ori. Stakeholder mapping and lots of organizations have their own internal stakeholders as well as external stakeholders. And I promise we'll move past the definition of impact very, very soon. But that's something that stakeholders have a different definition of too, or an expectation on, right? So employees have maybe a different expectation for organizational impact than the constituents or beneficiaries being served. And then funders have most likely a different expectation for impact than, board members or then leadership within an organization. And so that takes us back to just having a clear theory of change, having a clear definition of impact, having clear goals and objectives, therefore being able to determine important metrics and metrics that are important to ideally all stakeholders not just funders, and also not just the individuals or the community that you're serving, but trying, like you're saying, Ori, having some stakeholder mapping activities to where you can capture adequate metrics that, you know, will speak to ideally all parties. Not always, that's not always feasible. Will, you know, probably create or prevent a lot of hurdles and bumps in the long run. Because the reality is some stakeholder, or whether that's internal or external, some group of stakeholders are probably driving the impact measurement efforts to begin yeah. with. It's just a matter of, is that internal leadership, or is that, is it driven more by external funders because of a loss of funding? Or, so I really appreciate you mentioning that piece about stakeholder mapping. And I think that that's something that, that can really help organizations on the front end, determine more before they really dive in and really start to, you know, aim to measure impact. And then after a year or two, realize, oh, we really missed this critical piece. And now we have to not really start over, but pivot our efforts pretty significantly.
Yeah, I think so. And how often do you find in your work, Lauren, that organizations actually examine or re-examine that, right? Because stakeholders change all the time and their needs and wants change all the time. So I'm just curious, how often do you find that organizations actually go through these exercises? And what's the right amount?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think that most of them go through these exercises maybe informally. Hmm. If we're talking about stakeholder mapping, it seems to me that not always, but more often than not, we're approaching this conversation of impact measurement from a reactionary perspective. Most of the time, it's not, oh, well, I've heard about this and I know that we need to do this, so we'd like to explore it. Most of the time, it's, we just can't get the funding that we have. We're working so hard and we're just not seeing traction. And we're getting feedback from grant applications for other types of funders. And it just seems like the fact that we don't have enough impact data, or we're not communicating it effectively, is the hindrance. More reactionarily, we get a handful of clients who come to us saying, you know, we just lost this major funder that's been giving to us year over year for the last yeah. 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. And this is why. It's because we did not have any data to report to them. And so that is an informal, maybe I wouldn't call it stakeholder mapping, but they have an understanding now of where a certain group of stakeholders are at with their organization. And then the same is true for internal stakeholders. We have other organizations that come to us, and leadership is really interested in improving programs or expanding programs. So I would say typically it's either strongly driven by external stakeholder, typically funder, expectations, or internal stakeholders, whether that's board members and or leadership, but typically one or the other. But as far as a true formal stakeholder mapping exercise, I don't see that done very often, at least not with organizations that we work with. And I would say the same with theory of change and logic models. Most organizations maybe have, you know, a light theory of change, but it's just kind of been sitting there and it's a little outdated, if they have one at all. But would love to hear from both of you on that as well.
I think that we have more of an opportunity to map out the stakeholders because organizations come to us sometimes for the 3 to 5 year strategic plan initiative. So, you know, it goes without saying that when you're taking, you know, sort of that initiative on, it's a big investment, and it would be just blind if you would not take that step if you're planning for the next 3 to 5 years. And as Ori said, you know, usually it's because of a leadership change. And so they have their own perspective of what they want to, the change they want to see in the world and how they want the organization to adapt or not. But I think that it is really important to also acknowledge that the different stakeholders have a different influence on the organization, and that might change over time. But I think that we do see the stakeholder mapping initiatives as a big part of our work, because we do a lot of strategic planning. And that's just, it goes hand in hand.
Wonderful. Great, great insights, great questions, great feedback. All of this, I think, brings us to our next section that's on a lot of fragmented data that I think we both see. And when I say both, I mean SOIN and Social Impact Solutions, all three of us and our colleagues see organizations, whether they're nonprofits or even for-profits in the social goods sector, dealing with fragmented data. And would love to hear from both of you, just, you know, how do you, one, why do you think that this is such a consistent and persistent problem? I think what we just talked about with, maybe a lack of theory of change, a lack of strategy, and cohesiveness around impact measurement. But how are you seeing organizations struggle with fragmented data? And maybe how are you seeing some organizations overcome these challenges and move past fragmented data? By that, I mean, maybe they just have activity and output metrics, or maybe they started a more robust impact measurement initiative, but it kind of fell by the wayside. And it's been a few months, it's been a few years, maybe even before updated data has been captured, analyzed, and reported on.
I want to be the optimist here, and Ori can then take over with the pragmatic. But the optimist in me wants to say to your listeners that it's okay. Like, every organization struggles with this at one level or another. And by that, I mean, you know, we like to look at at organizations on a spectrum of data maturity, we call it. So, you know, all the way from, you know, you know that data is important, but you have no idea where it sits in your organization. To, we collect some data, but we're not sure like how to actually bring it together so that the whole organization can benefit from it. All the way to the very advanced and what we call data mature organizations, where most of their decisions are made through data, like insight-driven decisions. So my first reaction to that is, it's okay, and everybody's on that spectrum somewhere, and no one's perfect. And you should actually just really focus on taking that first step. So we've worked with organizations who say, we know that this is successful, and somewhere the data is in our organization. Can you help us find it? And we'll take them hand by, you know, by the hand, shoulder by shoulder, and say, okay, let's just dig, you know. We have other organizations that have great tools, so they are gathering a lot of data, but nobody knows what those tools are or how to use them. So that's another, you know, another thing. So that would be my first reaction, is it's okay. Like, everybody's somewhere on that spectrum and everybody can make progress. Ori, what do you think?
Oh, God. Yeah, so you're getting an inside view into, like, the core functional, you know, belly of SOIN, because as Sophie described, she's very much the optimist. I'm the data pragmatist, sometimes pessimist. So you know, you kind of need both, you know, left brain, right brain to operate together, which works for us. But I think that there are multiple challenges, right, with when it comes to leveraging data and aggregating the right data. Obviously, there's the, to me, four areas stand up. The first one is a discrepancy of time. A lot of times, because we work on social impact or environmental projects, the time it takes to see impact can be months or years or sometimes even decades, right? When we're talking about population health, for example, right? And one of the things that we've done really poorly as a social impact space, if you want to call it, is we've taken one of the worst qualities of the private sector and adopted it very, very quickly, and then took some other wonderful things that happen in the private sector and completely ignore them. And the thing that we took that doesn't work, or at least has a destructive tendency, is a very short time horizon. We have we have come to adopt a very monthly, if not quarterly, right, point of view on everything. Boards want to see results within a quarter. Investors and funders want to see results on a regular basis, right? And that's really, really challenging because the things that we work on take a long time to change. And organizations feel under pressure, again, going back to our conversation about impact, to report on impact, not recognizing that they can and should report on progress. But sometimes the impact takes a long time and they really need to do some work, stakeholder management work and relationship work with their stakeholders to explain that and be very transparent and upfront about that. And they don't. Sometimes they don't. You know, sometimes they commit or they, you know, commit to things that they are not going to be able to deliver on just to receive the grant or something like that. And that's where they trip themselves up. So that's challenge number one is timeframes. The second challenge that I see is definitions. We don't have clear definitions for what impact is for most of these areas, or at least we have definitions, but there's no consensus on all of them. And that really, really trips us up sometimes, right? We don't always know what good looks like, and we don't always agree on what impact, you know, how impact is going to be measured. Now, there have been multiple attempts to create all kinds of frameworks that fix that. You know, from United Nations to World Health Organization to, and you could just Google impact measurement frameworks and you will get literally thousands on every topic and every programmatic activity under the sun. But we haven't created any alignment there. And that's really hard, right? Which leads me to my next challenge, the third one, which Trista Harris talks about this quite a bit in her work, and she calls it falling in love with the problem. We really do have a tendency to fall in love with the problem. We are, as a space, a collection of people who are incredibly passionate about what they do, who are subject matter experts, who take a very academic, almost philosophical approach to our work sometimes. There are tremendous advantages to that. One of the disadvantages to that is that we tend to spend a lot of time trying to understand the problem and find perfect solutions. And that really hinders progress because by the time we have identified a solution or gathered all the right relevant data in the perfect way, guess what? The challenge has changed, right? So that really hinders our ability to see progress from a data perspective. And then the last one that comes to mind is adoption. Even when we do gather all the data and even when we do identify the right solution or a new path or optimize a specific framework, then we're really bad at actually integrating that into our strategic and tactical work through the right training, through empowering people, through giving them the right tools, knowledge, resources. So I would say in this space of data gathering, those are the four things that come to mind for me. Timeframes, definitions, perfecting or falling in love with the problem, and then adoption. That's a lot, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I love both perspectives. I love the optimistic perspective. I love the pragmatic perspective. John Mark and I are co-founders of Social Impact Solutions, and I think most people that know us would say that, you know, he's much more of the optimist, and I refer to myself as pragmatic. Some would probably say more pessimistic, but I think both are very important, right? We have to have levels of hope and optimism to keep moving forward, and we have to have levels of realism and maybe even a little bit of pessimism to look at what isn't working, what hasn't worked, and how we need to change that for the future. So you both raise great points. And Sophie, like you said, I would completely agree. You know, for organizations that just aren't there, that just you know, they're at the very beginning of their theory of change and their impact measurement efforts. The reality is, to some degree, it has to be okay because that's where you are and you can't really change, you can't expedite this process. But it's like people say about planting trees, you know, the best time to start was 10 years ago and the next best time is now. And I think we would all agree that that's the case with impact measurement, social impact efforts also. Ori, I love what you said, the challenges, the difficulties that you see a lot of organizations facing, or maybe even the entire sector overall, and that these issues, these challenges lead to fragmented data. And I would love to circle back to Ori's point about, you were talking more about definitions and a centralized approach or framework to impact measurement. I kind of want to ask a question in a little bit of a different direction, but similar. What are both of your thoughts on having a centralized data system? This doesn't come up too often, but I have heard funders and board members and other stakeholders raise the question. And I think that some people are all for having more of a centralized data system to help with impact measurement. I have my own thoughts on this, but I want to hear from both of you first. You know, one, is this even feasible? Two, would it be helpful or harmful? And then three, how do you see that this might be emerging in at least some aspects of the social impact or nonprofit impact measurement fields?
Just to make sure I understand the question, are you talking about a central data repository within an organization or across organizations, like for the social impact space?
Across organizations.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there have been multiple attempts at doing this over the years, right? The most recent one, and this was announced in the Microsoft Nonprofit Summit, which concluded, three days ago, something like that, last week. I know that the MacArthur Foundation is pushing the PDC, the Philanthropic Data Collaborative, which is a great initiative. I think conceptually, all of those things are in the right direction. They come with risks. They come with, challenges and issues. Obviously, there's the technology and the data aggregation challenge, right? Getting data from so many potential sources and defining the taxonomy of the data and the definitions and the structures of the data ecosystem. And how does the data come in and who does it come from and what gets deduped and it's coming in different formats and the ELT processes and all the technical questions. Let's put that aside, but that's a whole bucket of challenges right there, right? And then you got the ethical questions, right? Because a lot of this data can reveal some really, really interesting, sometimes very sensitive things. So if it does get aggregated and collated into a central repository, well, who owns that, right? Who owns that data? That becomes a very, very serious question. And what data gets included and what data gets excluded, and how do we make sure we, especially when we're talking about health, right? Data that includes individual or community health components, that becomes a legal issue as well. So how do you do all that protection? So we got the technical components, we got the legal/ethical components. Those are two separate things, but let's put them in one bucket. And then you got the, what do you do with it? And I think that's where the real question is, right? Like, getting the data into people's hand is like, you know, it's great. But for most organizations that we engage with in some way, shape, or form, at least at the beginning, some of the most interesting and most important questions are not how do we get the data, but what do we do once we have the data? Right? It's not just about getting more data from internal sources and external sources. It's really how do you leverage it for insights and identification of risks and opportunities and decision-making and better design and all those things. So thinking that this is just a technology problem, it's not. Thinking that this is just a games theory and systems solution problem and how do you incentivize organizations to give their data, it's not. Thinking that this is just a, you know, ethics problem. It's not, all of those components need to come together. I have yet to see a cross-functional industry-wide solution that does an amazing job, or even a decent job, at including all of those components. I've seen solutions that do some of all of that, of all of those things. I also want to recognize that that's really hard, really, really hard to do. I know there are several efforts along this path, some of which we are, you know, included in conversations, some of which I haven't been privy to the conversations. So it's an effort well worth pursuing, but still a goal that is yet to be reached.
From my perspective, it goes back to the where we started our conversation. Like, if you look at it from the stakeholder perspective, all the stakeholders that could benefit or have to partake in this process, I think that it is a question of balancing the cost and the potential learning for each stakeholder. And is it worth it? Is it, you know, what is the incentive for each of these stakeholders to partake and go through what we actually know is a painful process with, as Ori's pointing out, we don't know really what the outcome is, right? Is it truly actionable? Is it, you know, so I think it's a very big challenge, and that's why it's been a difficult process to move along and to get people to buy into. I just think that it's hard for each of the stakeholders to be like, yeah, okay, this is why I should go through the hassle, A, of sharing my data in what format, but of sharing my data full stop. Like, that's a big ask, you know, of organizations. And I just don't think that we found the right balance just yet, which is why it hasn't really succeeded. To Ori's point.
Yeah. It's a big ask. It's a big conversation. And I have a variety of viewpoints on it that I won't dive too deep into because I know we have other points we want to cover. I think it makes sense to maybe have a central data repository for Health and Human Services. And that's still huge. That's massive still. And then maybe within more of an environmental land, wildlife, conservation, you know, to break it down into various industries and sectors. And again, those are still really huge projects, huge asks. Nothing would be easy about that. While at the same time, I do come from more of a healthcare and public health perspective. And, you know, just through the CDC alone, there's so much state and national data that can be accessed that's coming from a lot of, not all, but nonprofit and for-profit hospitals, but it's de-identified data. So they're HIPAA compliant. And so if they can do it, I do believe that it can be done at a larger, more central repository type scale, at least at the national, but probably international level as well. But I'm not saying that's easy. It's certainly not quick. And there are still challenges with it, right? We can't look at CDC data and determine everything we want to know. Ori?
So I'm going to challenge there a little bit on it's not easy and it's not quick. There are forces working against it, right? I agree with you there. Here's a silver lining. Remember COVID, like that thing that happened 5 years ago that, you know, nobody remembers. I was in London at the time during COVID and living in London, not visiting. And I was working a lot with the NHS and the National Health Service. The NHS, for all of its faults, and they are many, is an incredible institution. Just an incredible institution, a well-respected institution. It's kind of like a national treasure. We don't have the equivalent of that because we don't have the same tradition of national healthcare in the U.S. Bad, good, everything in between. We're not going to get into that right now. But during COVID, something really interesting happened. At the beginning of COVID, people would literally walk around between hospitals with sticky notes of their symptoms because nobody knew what was going on, right? And there was no system of aggregating or sharing data between hospitals. We, for example, worked with King's Hospital Network at the time. part of King's College, which owns the 7 or 8 largest hospitals in central and southern London. And at the beginning of COVID, it was mayhem, right? Like nobody knew anything, and people would just walk around literally from one doctor to the next with sticky notes. By the end of COVID, there was a centralized system where I would walk into the office, give my identification number, and a doctor in one hospital would be able to pull up my record with every single meeting note, transcript, everything of all my symptoms, including trace and track apps, which were being launched at the time to help understand social distancing, right, in the city of London, which then integrated into these types of databases, all safely, all securely, without violating, you know, any privacy concerns at the individual level. So it's possible. And it happened in 12 to 18 months. I'm not saying it was perfect, but there was enough of a trigger to balance the forces that were holding it back, political, financial, whatever. So to me, those types of events prove that the progress is possible. Now, the real question is, what are the forces that are working against it? The technology exists, the frameworks exist, the data sharing capabilities exist, the legal protections exist, the data protections exist. All of these things exist. They're not being put together for different reasons. So,
yeah, that's a really great point. And I think it's fascinating what some of the good things or the collaborative efforts that can come out of challenging or even terrible, tragic situations like COVID. And so that to me is one of the most hopeful, optimistic, beautiful things about hard situations, whether
that's... Did you just call me an optimist?
I did not. I looked at Sophie when I said that.
And I would add, Ori, you know, and Laura, that there was a clear benefit there in this in the example that you shared, right? Everybody benefited. Like, you know, the patients got better treatments, you know, the doctors were able to treat their patients, you know, more effectively, probably, like, you know, reducing the amount of patients waiting in their, you know, in their waiting rooms panicked. So there was, I think that was actually one of the real drivers. Everybody had a clear reason to partake and participate in whichever way they could in that system.
Right. There was a central why behind that.
I love that. A central why. Exactly.
Yeah. And so I think that's where communication can oftentimes come in as such a powerful piece. Today we're talking more about data and measurement. But I know both of our teams focus a lot on capturing the data, analyzing it, but then communicating and reporting it effectively. And I think this is where communication in this example is such a powerful piece, you know, communicating to all stakeholders involved, right? Not just the ones creating the system, not just the physicians, not just the patients, but any stakeholder at any level is hopefully clearly understanding how they can be involved, how they can play a part, and having a central piece, a central effort that we're all working towards. It is amazing to see what can happen in what feels like record time, or might actually be record time, at least at this point in history. So I love those insights. I love all aspects of the conversation so far. Just given time and wanting to be respectful of both of your schedules, let's talk about a little bit, Ori, you mentioned this earlier as one of the challenges that you see, but timelines and stakeholder expectations. I had a conversation with a wildlife and land conservation organization just last week, actually. I was talking to one of their development officers, and they were just saying, you know, this takes decades to see change. And in fact, the last couple of years, we've seen that things have actually gotten worse. because they're up in Canada, and they were just saying, you know, politically, environmentally, we just don't have certain things in place. And so we're seeing certain fisheries and hunting efforts and some of these things that we're fighting against are actually getting worse. So I think advocacy, policy change, environmental concerns, and others are great to talk about here when it comes to, Ori, what you mentioned earlier with, you know, from the for-profit world, the social sector, the nonprofit sector has taken, you know, this really quick, fast turnaround approach that doesn't work when we're talking about social impact. While at the same time, we know that various stakeholders have that expectation that they want quarterly or, you know, at longest annual reports and updates on the true change, the impact that's occurring. So let's just talk about, you know, how do these more short-term metrics, even if we are talking about outcomes, you know, outcomes, outputs, activities, any of those more short-term components, if we're focusing on the short-term, you know, how is that affecting long-term social change or maybe even the lack of measuring the long-term change because we might be so focused on the short-term components?
Well, I think we agreed that both are important, right? And I think that, you know, sometimes even the stakeholders who are in a leadership position know that they won't be around to see whether the strategic plan, theory of change, all of their efforts are actually going to deliver on what their vision is. So that's just a reality. You know, you have to be able to juggle those two perspectives. What can I do within, you know, the short, medium, and long term? I think those are just, that's a strategic imperative. I mean, I don't think you should do one without the other. I'd love to share an example of an organization that we work with that I think does this beautifully, which is called the Prostate Cancer Research. It's an organization in the UK. They have different components. You know, they support, obviously, prostate cancer research initiatives. So very, you know, scientific, long-term, big investment. And they also do things that support the patient themselves. So I think they're a great example of an organization that has very defined long-term objectives of eradicating prostate cancer for men as a disease that it shouldn't affect all these people. They have very specific populations that they want to help, that is Black and brown British men and men with low health literacy. And so those are big long-term, right? Those to change their statistics. And then in the short term, they have very specific goals of empowering those patients and changing their cancer journey, which is much more short term, right? Because that's just like we go from months to a couple of years. And so they're able to measure that impact both on the short term, how many people are using their tools. They have an app called the InfoPool that it really is designed to empower prostate cancer patients and change their journey in the now, all the way to making sure that those populations that are at the most at risk stop being those populations who are bearing the brunt of it. So I think that it is possible. It just takes thoughtful and intelligent, brave leadership to acknowledge that the two can be done, but it takes that perspective.
That's great. That's such a clear explanation, such a clear example of how you can have both, of how you can have solid, strategic, long-term goals, objectives, and entire projects and programs, efforts that you know are going to take 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, and longer, as well as, you know, what are we doing now to help patients, physicians, healthcare systems to, you know, treat one patient at a time and, you know, educate one patient, one family at a time. So that's a fantastic example. I really, really love that. Ori, did you have any thoughts on sort of timeline breakdowns when it comes to short-term focal points and metrics versus actual long-term change?
No, I think Sophie's spot on. right? Like you need both. Mm-hmm. And to say, oh, you know, we won't measure short-term progress because that's not what we do. We, I don't know, whatever it is that the organization does that may take years, to say, okay, we're not going to measure that. We're only going to measure it once every 5 years, once every 10 years. It's not realistic either. You're not going to win any funding bids that way, right? You're not going to be able to keep the lights on. You need to show progress, but there's a difference, again, going back to our conversation about metrics, between activity metrics, which you need to pick up along the way to make sure that you are on the right track, that you are staying along the organization's true north, versus impact metrics, which tell you, have you made a difference? And you need both. I think Sophie's is spot on. I think in general, we, you know, everything in our conversations and approaches nowadays, in almost every subject, seems to get polarized, and it becomes a conversation of this versus that. You know, in most cases and most solutions, they're not at the edges, right? Like they're not at the extremes of any spectrum. Most solutions are actually kind of in the middle, and they include a little bit of this and a little bit of that. One of our colleagues at Sewin, just wrote a beautiful article about trust versus traditional based philanthropy, right? And there are these organizations who say, you know, we will only do trust based giving approaches. We will give you the money and we don't want to hear anything from you. We completely trust you as an organization. Here's $1 million. Okay, cool. That's great. And then other organizations want you to adhere to this specific set of metrics, and you need to report on them annually or even quarterly. And if you don't report on them, your funding will get cut. And I'm like, all right, well, both don't really adhere to most. There may be organizations that are a perfect fit for both, right, at those extremes, assuming that those are two extremes of a spectrum. But really, most organizations, in most cases, kind of need a mixture, right? And it feels like sometimes we fall into the same trap that we see all around us in, you know, in public discourse and politics and et cetera, about living at the extremes, or, you know, having our perspectives only viewed from the extremes. And most realities are actually a mixture, a much more complex mixture that's in the middle. So it kind of reminds me of that conversation of like, it's not either or, it's actually both. You need both to serve a purpose. You need long-term impact measures. You also need shorter-term activity metrics to try and understand and optimize and improve and reallocate resources where possible. You know, life's complicated.
It is. It's complicated, but I completely agree. You need both short, mid, long-term goals and objectives and impact targets that you're trying to hit. And if there aren't more of those short and mid-term metrics that you're measuring, then how do you know that you're making progress towards your 5 year or 10 year or 30 year goal? Just to break it down more simply, you know, if I want to run a marathon by this time next year, I am not going to go try and do that tomorrow. While at the same time, I'm not, just given where I'm at and everyone's at a different place in their journey, but I'm not only going to go run a half mile tomorrow either. I might go run between 3 and 7 miles because I've been training for a few months now. But, you know, and it's the same idea. And Sophie, as you mentioned earlier, an organization has to understand where they're at, and they might need outside consultancy help to fully understand that. But after you determine where you're at, then you know that you need to start with a 1 mile walk or a 5 mile jog, or do a half marathon by October. And, you know, it's truly, to me, it's that mentality and mindset. Of course, it's more complex than just an individual having a running plan or a workout plan. But it's that same mentality of, you know, we're trying to make progress. We're trying to do this for our organizations, for our communities, for the greater good all around the world. And we need to measure that progress accordingly. If we want, you know, we can't just talk about this like it's fun and cute and flowery. If we really want to make true social change for people, for communities, and for entire populations. So I really appreciate both of your perspectives. So many great insights. I know that we could sit here and talk about any one of these points for many more minutes or hours. But as we wrap up here, I would just love to hear from each of you one or two key takeaways that you would give to social impact nonprofit leaders of how they can, you know, take an example of, you know, Sophie, whether it's your example from the Prostate Research Center or other organizations that you've both worked with, and maybe a failure story or a challenge story or a success story that would just give listeners some practical steps to go back to their organization and start to, you know, make more progress in their impact measurement efforts.
Well, I think that it always starts with where you're at. I mean, where are you today? And accepting, like I said before, that wherever you are, it's okay. I think to your point, you know, we work with a lot of organizations as an outside source of support, because sometimes you're so into the activities, the day-to-day, the pressures of your organization, of the stakeholders, you know, of the current environment, that you just never have a chance to just bounce ideas off with another person to say, what could be my next best step? So I think knowing where you are today is an absolute must. And I think everybody should be brave and not look away. I do a lot of work in thinking about AI, and that's my same message to organizations. Like, it's happening. It's scary. We don't really know what it looks like 5 years from now. Absolutely not an excuse not to jump in. You're going to, you know, you're just going to pay a price. So I think starting with the very basics, your mission, your vision, your purpose, what's your theory of change? How are you going to get there? Where are you on that process? And how can you measure progress, whether that's small, mid, or long term? That's where it starts. You know, we have very easy tools at Selwyn. One is a conversation. We're happy to talk to anyone and say, where are you at today? What are your biggest barriers? Where do you want to be? And have that conversation. You know, we have a data maturity assessment that's super easy on our website that says, where am I with my data and technology? Like, are we using it at all in our organization? It takes 5 minutes to find out. So that's what I would say is start at the beginning. What's your why? And what is the next easiest first step that you can take?
Yeah, for me, I think the data maturity model that Sophie mentioned as a starting point, as a tool, is really, really critical. It also gives you a view into where you want to grow into, because there are multiple paths, right? There's not a one-size-fits-all kind of roadmap. Every organization is going to be different. It's going to want to prioritize different things. It's going to have different pressure points, right? So to be able to see what is the typical path, but then determine where does that path vary for you? Where does it move 5 degrees to the left or 5 degrees to the right is really, really important. And again, the data maturity tool that we've created doesn't give you a perfect solution. It's not a diagnostic tool, but it gives you a really good idea of where you are today and the possibilities of where you might want to grow into the future and what are the things that you need to do to get there. The other thing that I would say is, and this is something that we need to get better at as a space, but I see us getting better at it, especially over the last few months, maybe year, creating sustainable, systematic solutions, not just solving the problem that's ahead of us right now, but solving something in a way that can scale over time and in breadth. Now, that requires multiple capabilities to come together. Traditionally, we have looked at problems and said, okay, this is a technology problem, or this is an adoption problem, or this is a people problem, or this is a political problem. The reality is, for most of these problems that we face, it's actually an aggregation of multiple things. So you need to approach it with a technology lens, but also from a people's lens, and also from a capabilities, and also make sure that you think about adoption and incorporation, you know, and those are the solutions that last. The solutions that don't last are the ones that approach a problem from one specific angle. And once, you know, if all you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. But really, it gets more complicated than that. And the most meaningful, impactful, sustainable solutions are ones that cover a wider gamut of approaches and bring them all together. Those are the solutions that are really interesting.
Thank you both. I think those are both fantastic, great key takeaways for listeners. You both alluded to this, but I would love to just clearly state where listeners can find SOIN and your data maturity model or assessment, as well as, you know, where individuals can connect with either of you individually. If Sophie, you want to share your points of contact, and then Ori, same for you as well.
Sure. I mean, I would love to have further conversations. So please, you can contact me on LinkedIn. My last name is Blondeau, Blondeau. You can reach me on my email, which is my whole name, sophieblondeau@soin.co. And you can learn more about SOIN and find the data maturity model at soin.co. So happy to connect with anyone.
Yeah. The best way to reach out to me is LinkedIn, really. So Ori Carmel, O-R-I-C-A-R-M-E-L. Yeah. Would love to talk to smart, kind people who are interested in doing meaningful things.
Wonderful. Thank you both so much. We'll definitely put that information in the show notes as well, so that people can easily find your website and your data maturity model, and other great resources that you've shared, that I've had the pleasure of looking through. So thank you again so much to Ori and Sophie and the entire team at SOIN. We really appreciate your collaborative approaches and your insights. And just thank you so much for the conversation today.
Thank you, Lauren.
It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.